Three simple words, uplift, inspire, and encourage, perfectly identify American Family Studios. Since 2011, we've created documentaries, animation, films, and audio to uplift, inspire, and encourage individuals and audiences worldwide. Reclaiming media from the filth Hollywood and the world push on us and our children. See what we have to offer your family when you visit AmericanFamilyStudios.net. AmericanFamilyStudios.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Monday, August the 25th, 2025. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And good morning, Fred Jackson.
Hey, good morning, Tim.
All right, so nothing's going on in the world, so we will return you to our regular schedule. No.
We're going to listen to music now.
Yeah, listen to me, elevator
all
music.
The problems have been solved.
All right, so a lot to talk about today on this program, the things happening in the world. And by the way, we've had a team of guys, Chris Woodward being one of them, who's been over in Israel the last few days, right?
Yes, three members of our staff, JJ and Chris Woodward and John Riley. John Riley has stayed on for an extra time over there. John Riley, for those who may not be aware, he does our Israel update on the weekends, does a fantastic job. And I think he has relatives in Israel, too. So he's staying on. But Chris and JJ made it back to American soil this morning. They are now treading time. I'll put it that way.
Does that mean sitting in a New York or Atlanta airport?
Newark.
Newark. Okay.
They have to wait about 7 or 8 hours for their connection to Memphis.
Yeah.
I tracked their flight last night. FlightAware is a lot of fun, in case anybody's not aware.
Yeah.
From the time
fascinating
that they sarcasm. From the time they took off, they flew over Vienna, Austria, and over Greenland and down into Newark this morning. What, 12-hour flight, something like that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Totally in the dark. Mm-hmm. That whole flight.
I've done that many times, and you have to go north to go south, so to speak.
Yes.
You know, because you're flying on the curvature of the earth, mm-hmm. which is
save time.
Yeah, yes. Which is a sphere. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you save time. So a couple of times I've gone what looks like to be, you know, more a direct path, if you were to lay the earth flat on the, you know, flat on a surface. But yeah, you have to go up through over Greenland and Iceland and Great Britain from New York, and then come down through over the Alps and, you know, Italy and down into Tel Aviv.
Just a word of friendly advice.
Yeah.
I would never talk about laying the earth flat. That's going to really cause some of our listeners to lose their minds.
Okay, because they think
Tim is a flat earther.
I'm a flat earther. Well, okay, you can say what you want to, but I've almost sailed over the edge a couple times on summer vacation.
And I will say this. I've made that trip to the Middle East just twice. Tim, yours is in the dozens and dozens of times. But you do not want to get stuck either going or coming back next to a crying baby.
I
did on one of the trips. It was either to Israel or to Jordan. And on the way over there, this shows you that God is opposed to the proud. On the way over there, I had an open seat next to me.
Okay.
And which is rare. Those are usually packed. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, Lord, thank you so much. I could stretch out, put my stuff there. And the thought crossed my mind, God blesses his children when they're living right. I was kidding about that part. But on the way back, the flight, crying baby three seats down, crying baby behind me, my television didn't work. Oh, and it was just a complete slap down.
Yeah.
What did you do while you were there? Yeah.
My goodness. It was awful.
He raw dogged. Isn't that what they call it?
I have no idea.
There's a term it's a new expression that they use for people who look straight ahead with nothing, just staring off into space for hours on end. You ever heard this? You've never seen this before?
I've done that before. I don't know what raw
really?
Dog means.
I think that's what it, anyway.
I will say this. I've eaten hot dogs cold on occasion, and so that's the closest I've gotten to raw dog.
Yeah. That may not be what it's called. It's called something like that. It's where people can just stare straight ahead and you know, with no TV, no entertainment, no sound, no nothing for hours. So, all right, Fred, what's the first thing happening in our world today?
Well, as we sit here and chat with our audience, President Trump is in the Oval Office at this very moment, signing a bunch of executive orders. One of them being he's called upon his defense secretary to set up specialized National Guard units around the country to deal with public order issues. And we're going to talk about this a little bit later because President Trump thinks beyond D.C., cities like Chicago, Baltimore, New York, they need National Guard troops. So also he's... if you burn the flag, you get 1 year in jail. Now, remember, these are executive orders, folks. It seems to me flag burning has gone up the proverbial legal pole all the way to the Supreme Court. What this executive order means, I'm not sure. But also, you know, just he wants to end cashless bail. Also, so all of this is going on in Washington, D.C. right now. Not far away from D.C., we had breaking news this morning. He could perhaps be called the best-known illegal alien. His name is Kilmer Obrego Garcia. He's the guy who, back several months ago, was deported to El Salvador along with a bunch of others. And remember the Democrat that went down there and had lunch with him, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, there was a court order to bring him back. He was brought back to the United States from El Salvador. By the way, he's from El Salvador originally, this guy, this Kilmer Obrego Garcia. They brought him back, and he was charged with human smuggling. And that's in connection to a stop in 2022 in Tennessee, and he had a bunch of people in the car with him. So he's in the country illegally. Nobody's debating that. There is this outstanding charge now. Now, what happened on Friday was he's been held in a detention center in Tennessee. A judge said he has to be let go, and they took him to where he's been living the last several years in Baltimore. This morning, very early, he reported to the Immigration Center, ICE Center, there in Baltimore. Apparently, over the weekend, Mr. Obrego Garcia was given some options. If he pled guilty to the smuggling charges, he could serve a bit of time, but then go to Costa Rica, if he agreed to that, to plead guilty. If he didn't plead guilty, they were going to deport him to Uganda. The report is at this hour he did not plead guilty, and so he is, as of this hour, under arrest. However, his lawyer is already going to court to say that this detention at this point is illegal. So we'll see how that all works out. So that is Kilmer Obrego Garcia. It was very interesting this morning. Fox actually covered this live. He shows up at the ICE Center there in Baltimore, and he's got this throng of people, supporters behind him, including a priest and some others. And he was painted as, you know, just a wonderful, wonderful individual, despite the fact that he broke into the country. And so that's where he is. You're going to see a lot about this guy. The mainstream media, he has become a hero for them because they don't like what Donald Trump is doing with regards to illegal immigration. So we'll see what happens.
And so he's not actually been convicted of the human smuggling.
That is correct.
These are the charges have been against him. By the way, I'm looking at a story about Abrego Garcia on American Family News. You can check that out on AFN.net. So this is, I think if he had been convicted, it might make a little bit of difference on the part of the mainstream media. But they've never seen a criminal or someone charged with a crime that they didn't love if the Trump administration and the president are on the other side of it, which Trump is because of the legal status of Kilmer Abrego Garcia. By the way, what is the reason for this deal that the U.S. government has offered to Garcia? If you confess to the human smuggling, you go to El Salvador. If you don't, go
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica. Yeah. If you don't, you go to Uganda.
Yes.
Is that a tougher prison?
I guess so. The Trump administration, Homeland Security, they've signed deals with a bunch of different countries
right,
now.
Right, take prisoners.
And I'm assuming there's a candy in the Costa Rica thing.
Yeah.
Much nicer country, closer to the United States. If you don't confess, we're going to ship you to Uganda.
Yeah. And these countries who have agreed to take prisoners.
Yes.
We pay them for that. So this is...
Oh, there's always money.
So there's money going. That's why okay.
Yes. That's their enticement for taking them.
Right.
Yes.
All right, next story.
All right, well, somewhat connected, Secretary of State Marco Rubio announced that he is halting
Marco.
Work.
Marco.
Little,
I'm sorry.
Little Marco.
I shouldn't have
Rubio.
Done that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Anyway, he's halting work visas for foreign commercial truck drivers, and a lot of people who are concerned about the legality of giving commercial driver's licenses to people who can't speak English. That's been around for a while. But all of this is in connection to the incident last week that we reported on. This is a man who entered this country illegally. His name is Harjinder Singh. He was involved in that horrible accident down in Florida. He's driving an 18-wheeler, does a U-turn on a turnpike. A van with three people in it slammed into the back of that trailer, and they all tragically died. He and the other person in that truck fled back to Stockton, California. He was arrested there and has returned to Florida. So what we're learning is that apparently there are a lot of these 18-wheeler truck drivers in this country, whether they've come in legally or illegally, they don't know how to read. They can't speak English, and they don't know how to read English signs. And so...
Yet they're being hired to drive 18-wheelers for companies?
Exactly.
Across the country.
Yes. This story about unqualified people to hold a commercial driver's license for these trucks, this concern has been around for a long time, long before the incident in Florida last week, that some of these people who do an honest business, who have qualified drivers, are pointing to these other companies that basically hire anything. Of course, the other aspect is this. In California, it doesn't matter if you're an illegal immigrant. Doesn't seem to matter if you can speak English or not or read a sign. They'll give you a commercial driver's license. And that's one of the big problems. Sean Duffy, he is our transportation secretary. He was talking about this. Mr. Singh, who's now back in custody in Florida, there is a petition that came out on the weekend signed by 2.5 million people asking Florida to go easy on him. Well, Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy was talking about that. Cut number four.
They gave him a full-term CDL. That's reserved for American citizens, to which he is not an American citizen. And we put out a rule, by the way, just backing up a little bit, Trey, in May that says if you got a CDL, you have to speak the language and understand road signs. That went into full force and effect in June. In July, this guy was pulled over in New Mexico and for speeding, and they did nothing to take him out of service. We tested him after the crash. He failed full stop, failed, couldn't speak the language, couldn't see, couldn't understand road signs, and New Mexico should have put his vehicle out of service. And had they, we would have saved those three lives. So again, we're going to come out next week with some more news on this. But the bottom line is, follow the rules of DOT in your state, or there will be serious consequences.
Well, I'm sorry.
Well, this doesn't make the New Mexico Highway Patrol look good at all. Makes them look bad. If what that gentleman there is saying is accurate.
Because that those three lives would be, they'd be still here with us.
I would look forward to an explanation from New Mexico.
There's got to be records of the stop. Right. These trucks, they have identifiers. My point, the thing that I think about is there are only two reasons for a company to hire someone like this. Number one, they don't have enough drivers. Okay, I'm not saying that's an excuse, but that might indicate why they'll just take anybody. Or number two, they're paying them less. And if that's the case, these companies should be put out of business or fined heavily because they are paying illegals who cannot drive safely. I say that because they can't read signs, they can't speak English. And they're coming from countries where driving is not an art, okay, unless you're trying to stay alive. He was pulled over for speeding in New Mexico. So if these companies are hiring someone so they can pay them less, that's putting American citizens out of work, and they just don't want to pay a good wage for their truck drivers. I don't know what other reasons there could be for hiring someone who is an illegal and can't speak the language or understand signs. Yeah. You're just either so desperate for someone to drive a truck, you'll lower your standards, or you already have low standards and you pay less.
So Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, he's doing what exactly? What's the bottom line of this story?
Well, the bottom line is they're going to stop giving work visas for foreign commercial truck drivers.
Okay.
All right. So it doesn't matter whether you've entered the country legally or illegally.
Right. Probably until they get this all sorted out.
Well,
keep this from happening again.
They want to make sure the basics are there. Number one, the person can drive, has some degree of experience in 18 wheels, but more importantly, that they can pass an English test, both reading and spoken. And this guy, Singh, it's been reported, there's a 12 things that you have to be able to read English.
Yeah.
He only passed two. Yeah. But he still got, in California, he still got
the California gave him a driver's license anyway to drive a commercial driver's license.
Well, once you cross state lines, it's a federal issue. Mm. I don't know what kind of trouble the state trooper could get in, the New Mexico state trooper, for letting this guy go. The state troopers should understand federal law, and they should do what they have to do if a person is driving and breaking federal law. I mean, they're not federal agents of the federal government, but I don't know, something has to be done.
But I'm just envisioning a highway patrolman in New Mexico walking up to the truck or the truck driver, this guy getting out, this Indian man from not American Indian, but a
Indian
getting out of the car, of the 18-wheeler, and trying to converse with this guy. And you got going, this guy can't even speak English.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't know. It'd just be interesting to see what was written down.
I will say that maybe the state trooper looks at him. He says he's got a California driver's license, commercial.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not up to the state trooper, I guess, to see if he can pass a driving test. Maybe he thinks, well, he's got a license.
Right.
California, they know what they're doing. I don't know.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issue. Well, good for Marco Rubio, though, for doing that, till we get that situation solved or worked out, to keep that from happening again. And I know there are probably a lot of nervous companies if they've got people out on who are not legal citizens out on the highways driving our commercial trucks.
Absolutely.
Did you see the other day where there was a fella in New England who was a police officer who was an illegal alien?
What?
Did you not see this?
A policeman?
Yeah, he was a policeman. and he was illegal. He was here illegally. Look it up. Type it up. Type it. Type it up. I don't know. Can you type it down? New England police officer is you put him undocumented or illegal, whatever you want to put, illegal alien. See if it doesn't come up.
Yeah, ICE. Okay, so this is from the ICE website, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. ICE arrests illegal alien serving as a local police officer after attempting to unlawfully purchase firearm in Maine. He's a Jamaican national. He attempted to illegally purchase a firearm for his employment as a local police officer.
Yeah.
So he was arrested.
In Maine.
Now he was employed as a reserve police officer.
Right.
But still, that's
Maine's probably a sanctuary state. I doubt they even asked for a proof of citizenship.
Pretty liberal.
Wouldn't you say?
Pretty liberal.
Yeah. There you go. So he was going to be a police officer there, though. Or was he?
Well, he was this ICE.
A Jamaican in Maine.
Yes.
Talk about somebody that was a standout.
Yes. Well, yes.
Am I right?
Well, that accent is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Well, and this says that he was.
Hey, Mom.
Hey, Mom. You're going to have to pull over that. He was a reserve police officer.
Okay.
But he was not apparently issued a firearm. So that's why he tried to illegally purchase a firearm, because they didn't give him one for his reserve officer position. And that's when they caught him.
Wouldn't you think you would ask for proof of citizenship before you hired somebody to be a police officer?
Listen,
wouldn't you think?
This guy didn't even have a lawful visa. This press release from ICE says he lawfully entered the United States September 24th, 2023. However, he violated the terms of his lawful admission when he overstayed his visa.
Yeah.
So if you're hiring people for reserve officer status, do you not check to see if they have a lawful visa? This is just getting bizarre. Mm. To your point, it may very well be that somebody loses their job in Maine because they, you know, wink, wink, we'll give you a job. We're a sanctuary state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you won't stand out at all. You'll blend right in.
In Maine. A Jamaican in Maine. Kind of like that.
That would make a movie.
Kind of like Cool Runnings or something.
Yeah.
Take a break a little early here. All right. What did you say? You combined Canadian with Jamaican there, Fred. What did you say?
Hey, Mom.
Hey, Mom. Hey.
Hey, Mom.
Hey, Mom. Hey, Mom.
All right. We will return with more after this short time out. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stern. Stand by for news and commentary next. Vacation Bible School may be old school, but it's still very popular among kids across the Fruited Plain. CBN News reports nearly 3 million kids attended VBS at Southern Baptist churches over the summer, some 70,000 making a personal decision to follow Christ. Vacation Bible School, a week-long affair hosted by churches featuring fun adventure themes for kids, along with arts and crafts, singing, and lots of recreation. Many churches turn snack time into an art form. You know, when I was a kid, I got to double dip. I went to my family's Baptist Church VBS. Then I attended my grandparents' VBS at the Methodist Church. Now, the Methodist had a lot better snacks. Almost switched denominations as a second grader because of that. The surge in VBS attendance could be a sign that more young families are now returning to the traditions of our faith. And the best part, kids actually want to get up early to go to VBS. Public school, not so much. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to today's issues on American Family Radio, Mon. And Tim with Ed and Fred.
Got that Jamaican accent going, Tim.
If you missed the last segment, then that's what that was referencing, and we really don't have time to review that again. Because we are apt here from time to time to rabbit trail.
And oh, yes.
And if we go back to the last segment, we will rabbit trail again.
I'm not sure what you call that. If you
rabbit trail?
If you rabbit trail
twice
to revisit the first rabbit trail you took.
I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. You need to invent a word.
I'll research that.
Research that. Or invent a word for it. All right. So our guest in studio is who, Ed?
Yes, we have Ann Cockrell, who's a co-host of Hannah's Heart, heard Saturdays at 4 a.m. Central Time and 5 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio. And we want to talk to Ann about Hannah's Heart second annual Bibles for Babies campaign. First of all, Ann, welcome to today's issues.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I want to ask the obvious question.
Okay.
How does a baby read a Bible? But before we get to the campaign, tell our listeners who might not be aware, maybe they don't listen to the radio on weekends or whatever, about Hannah's Heart.
So Hannah's Heart was created mainly to hopefully minister to couples and encourage them to cling to Christ during their time of struggling with infertility, miscarriage, child loss, that kind of thing. But we've definitely grown to more than that, especially on the show. If people listen in, the show has covered things from adoptions to failed adoptions to singleness, but you're, you know, wanting to have babies, you know, but you're not married. And so we've covered child loss and even how to help crisis pregnancy centers.
What percentage of couples deal with infertility?
It's a very staggering statistic now. We have the newest statistic of there's 1 in 3 pregnancies end in miscarriage. So 1 in 3. And then it's 1 in 8 couples that struggle with infertility. So it's
1 in 3 pregnancies end in miscarriage.
1 in 3.
Is that? I know we're chasing a rabbit here a little bit.
It's related, though.
It's related.
So is that number going up?
That number's gone up.
Okay.
Yeah, that number's gone up since we started Hannah's Heart. When we first started Hannah's Heart, it was 1 in 4, and now as of last year, the statistic went to 1 in 3 at the beginning of this year.
Is it okay? So is this because the statistics, that keeping the statistics is becoming more efficient? Mm. Or do we have some sort of trend here, and any idea why that would be going up?
Well, you could take me down a rabbit hole.
Okay.
if you wanted me to get into all of that.
You would only be speculating, right?
I would be speculating. Now, there's some, you know, proof in the pudding of what all we're taking in. Just as Americans, the things that we breathe in daily, the things that we eat, the hormone disruptors and the lotions that we use and the candles that we burn and the Glade things that you plug in on your wall, you know, those things are all hormone disruptors.
College football has nothing to do.
College football.
Okay.
I don't think
we're safe on that.
We're safe on that.
Okay. All right.
Now, you may have to stop using some of your lotions, you know.
I was thinking when she said body lotions.
Your Axe body spray,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Those kinds of things, you know, which I'm very dependent on.
Yeah, I always see you rubbing your hands.
Yes, yes.
You know,
I can tell you about some better lotions.
Natural.
Yeah.
All right. So the Hannah's Heart program airs weekends, 10:30. 4 o'clock Central Time on Saturday and 5 o'clock Central Time on Sunday on American Family Radio. Tell us about specifically. We're gonna ask people for money right now.
Are we
not?
Yes.
We are straight up.
I guess not.
This is a very. I like this campaign.
Okay.
What are we doing? What are we doing here?
So what we are asking for and encouraging for people to do is you can donate $10, and that provides one Bible. And I know it does sound silly, Bibles for babies, because babies can't read. But our local pregnancy center here in Tupelo, where we're located, is Parkgate Pregnancy Center. And they started doing this a little over a year ago, providing Bibles for women and young girls who come in and have a positive pregnancy test. And so that is their first baby gift, their first congratulations, because we know that crisis pregnancy centers, they're usually seeing girls that might not have been planning for this pregnancy, right? But we as Christians know and believe that each child that is conceived is a child made in the image of God. Rather, that being conceived is necessarily what we believe is the correct way. It's probably might be outside of marriage or might not be what should have happened, but that baby is here and is created in the image of the Lord. And if it has a heartbeat, then that's a life worth saving and worth celebrating.
And so the Bibles are for the mom.
For the moms.
But that is also to get them thinking in terms of Jesus Christ in terms of when they raise their babies.
So what inspired me when I talked to my friend who is the director of Parkgate Pregnancy Center here, she told me a story that they had this was random to get the Bibles at first, and that was before we were involved, but they gave a Bible to a young girl who came in, and she said, I've never had a Bible before, and she kind of didn't understand, like, why are you giving me this? The baby's not here yet. You know, I just had my first positive pregnancy test. But she ended up going home, reading that whole Bible to her little baby belly that night, came back the next day and said, I want to know Jesus. I want to know. I read this whole Bible last night.
Is it just a New Testament?
It's no.
She read the whole Bible?
Well, she didn't read the whole Bible overnight.
It's a children's Bible.
Oh,
yeah. Yes. Okay. So it's a new beginner's children's Bible.
Yeah. All right.
Something that I grew up.
Sound like you didn't believe it, Ed.
Well, I was just, she's a speed reader.
I'm glad you clarified. Yes. Yeah.
Speed reader.
She was a speed reader.
So new beginner's Bibles for children.
Gotcha. Yes, it is a children's Bible.
But you're saying she read that and witnessed to her.
Yes.
And she got saved.
Yes. And so it was at Parkgate, that's when Andrea was saying, she was like, you know, we've always felt the need to provide physically for these women. You know, we got diapers and formula and bottles, clothes, things like that. But are we providing the spiritual needs? And that's actually number one.
Amen.
And so at Parkgate, they offer parenting classes for the mom and the dad, or if the dad might not be in the picture, the mom and her mom, you know, things like that. And so once you go through these parenting classes, you then get like a diaper bag full of things. And so they wanted the Bible to be the first part of that.
Okay, how do people give $10?
People give $10 by going to afr.net, and it is our homepage. And so you just click on the link there, and you can donate that way, or you can call in at 877-616-2396.
How you do that again? Give that information. You know, $10 buys a Bible that's given to a young lady who is in a situation where she has an unexpected or unwanted pregnancy.
And that's right. Okay,
go ahead.
So you can go to afr.net and just click on the link there. It's there provided for you, Bibles for Babies right there. Or you can call in at 877-616-2396.
I do want to make our listeners aware. If you go to afr.net, the first thing you see is a big banner there. And it changes. There's four or five different banners. So you might have to wait, or you can click an arrow to get to the very first one, which is the Bibles for Babies campaign.
Yes.
That's where you would click.
All right, Ann, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Appreciate you being on with us.
And that wasn't a bad rabbit trail.
And Cockrell.
Yeah. That wasn't a bad rabbit trail. We're going to have Ann back to talk about this with the miscarriages. That's stunning.
Yeah.
So we'll make plans to have you come back maybe next month.
I'll have
something.
My show notes ready for that.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. You'll have your stats ready.
It's Ann Cockrell joining us. And as always, we encourage you to support your own local crisis pregnancy center.
Yes.
In your community.
Lots of Christians don't even know there are crisis pregnancy centers in their community. A lot of churches don't know. And those churches should be helping those crisis.
Well, because that's the front line of the pro-life movement.
Yes.
Think about it.
Yeah.
And there's no laws that stop you from participating. Even if you live in a blue state, you should be, your church, if your church is pro-life, and you should be going to a pro-life church, then you should be, your church should be in some way supporting the local crisis pregnancy center, which is trying to help the young ladies who are in a situation that, you know, where they are considering whether to abort their baby or let, or keep their baby or give their baby up to adoption.
Right.
And also, you know, we, the crisis, most crisis pregnancy centers are what you call Christian based. And so they are witnessing.
Yes. And just like that was Anne's talking about the fact that the spiritual life is actually the most important. And so these Christian crisis pregnancy centers are trying to do both, trying to take care of the spiritual needs, but also take care of the physical needs, which are very real to these young ladies who are oftentimes single moms or first-time moms. They're scared, and they need help.
Yes. Fred, what's your next story?
Well, you know, over the years, over the last many years, one of my favorite restaurants has been Cracker Barrel.
Cracker Barrel, yeah.
Love going there. Breakfast, wonderful. But even if you had to wait outside in those rockers. And I've bought a lot of Christmas gifts because they have very unique Christmas gifts in there. But, you know, I probably have gone to my last Cracker Barrel because of what's going on there. And I think probably there are a lot of Americans who feel the same way.
Why?
The reason being, I was going to say the company has gone woke, but the company went woke a long time ago. They just hid it.
Yes. By the way, and let me just, listeners, you want to hang in here because I thought this was kind of recent, but this is, this goes back a decade or more.
Yes.
12, 13 years, maybe even more.
If you haven't seen it yet, I saw my first new billboard advertising the new branding, as they call it, but it goes so far beyond that. It goes to the leadership of this company, which has been, has had a virus that came in, like you said, at about 10 years ago. And I want to, Robbie Starbuck is a conservative activist. He exposes things going on in companies. All right.
He was the first that did the Bud Light, wasn't he? I think he might have been the first with the transgender spokesperson.
Yes. Listen, folks, basically what's been going on, and we've seen this in other companies before, is that they start bringing people into their board of directors. And this is what happened at Cracker Barrel. They started to hire people who were LGBTQ, who were, you know, diversity hires, however you want to explain it. But let me give you a little bit about Robbie Starbuck, has what he's been reporting over the last several days of the things that have been going on, the kinds of people they've been hiring, what they've been up to at Cracker Barrel. Cut number 13.
We investigated Cracker Barrel, and what I'm about to show you is a company infested with left-wing activists who are more interested in safe spaces, pronouns, and virtue signaling than they are in their customers. I think the best way to start is by telling you what you've been funding if you've gone to Cracker Barrel in recent years. So let's start with Nashville Pride. Yes, Cracker Barrel is a proud sponsor of Nashville Pride and have been part of it for over a decade, along with participating for multiple years in Evansville, Indiana's Third River City Pride event. They even made LGBTQ plus rocking chairs for these Pride events, the same Pride rocking chair that they put front and center in their Tennessee corporate office and at their 2019 Managers Conference for the Cracker Barrel Managers.
All right, and it goes well beyond that, their involvement. Gay pride parades, all of these sorts of things. All of this leading up to some big changes on their branding and what the restaurant now looks like inside. It had that kind of down-home farmer's look. I used to love going in there because my grandfather was a farmer, and they'd have equipment that used, you know, horse-drawn hay rakes and all that sort of thing. Saddles, all of those sorts of things. And now they want it to look modern, but now we know what is behind all of that. And that is a CEO and groups of people that sit on the board of directors that think that it was a good idea to have involvement, heavily involvement from the LGBTQ crowd.
Well, here's the thing. Now, I saw the headline for a New York Times article about this, and it said that this change in the logo and then the designs, the layouts and the what's on the walls of the individual restaurants has become kind of an inkblot test, Rorschach test, where you see what you want to see in it. The left sees it as just good marketing changes. Conservatives see this as a betrayal of the restaurant's values. I was surprised to I tend to now think this might be a little more woke. At first, I wasn't sure what to make of it. I'll be honest.
Because all restaurant change up.
They make changes. Now, Bishop E.W. Jackson this morning, he was substituting for Jenna Ellis. He said, in his opinion, what Cracker Barrel is trying to do is to appear less white and less country. Because there's the old white guy that is the... was the old part of the logo. And then inside the restaurant, you had all these farming implements that kind of speak to country values and the old way of life. So I have no idea what Cracker Barrel was thinking. I don't particularly care for the new layout. Their food, at least in the local restaurant, hasn't changed a whole lot. I haven't been for weeks and weeks, well before this announcement. But it had been trending downward in quality a little bit. In terms of this being, as Bishop Jackson laid out, an attempt to move away from country and rural values, I can't answer that question. But they're getting a lot of flack. And in the week of the announcement of this, their stock plummeted. But I think now it's kind of moved up a little bit. We'll have to wait to see if this turns out to be a go woke, go broke thing.
Well, I didn't know that they were so heavily involved with the Human Rights Campaign. Mm-hmm. That Human Rights Campaign is a left-wing organization based in Washington, D.C., and they promote the LGBTQ agenda. And evidently, Cracker Barrel has been giving them money
for 10 years.
10 years, yeah, yeah. Been giving them money. So they're. So I was surprised at that. I was surprised to hear that.
I just don't understand why companies do this. Great company, they had to be making money. Every time I drove by a Cracker Barrel, the parking lot was full.
Right.
And you had to wait many times, sit outside in the rockers and wait to get in, especially on Sundays. The place was packed. So you're doing a really good business, and you sit around a boardroom and you say, let's change things.
Right.
I just don't understand that. Why you do that. And the only reason I can come up with is that you have a change of thinking at the very top, and you're going to try to appeal to a whole new group of people.
Right.
Even if it costs you those customers that have been loyal to you for decades.
Yes, I think that's part of when people say go woke, go broke. And by the way, Robbie Starbuck is no one to mess with. He gets a lot of publicity on. He's not a superhero, by the way, even though the name sounds like a superhero. But he gets a lot of traction on social media. And so I don't think this is going away. If he targets Cracker Barrel, you may wind up seeing a continued erosion of support from people who don't like being told, even though it's implied, we don't need you anymore, we're going after someone different. And by the way, when I said Bishop, a lot of our listeners do know who Bishop Jackson is. He's a black man and a preacher. And so when he says he thinks they're just trying to appear less white, that's not coming from a white guy. That's coming from a black guy who's observed a lot of this woke / DEI.
What's white about, what's color-centric about Cracker Barrel?
Well, it's the logo. The logo was an old rural white guy.
Standing, what's wrong with that?
Well, exactly. I think that's what Bishop Jackson was saying.
I just see an old guy in overalls by a Cracker Barrel.
Yes.
Which is the name of the store.
Right. Well, that's because you're thinking rationally, Tim. It is irrational for people to think this speaks about white privilege and this is a
that's
white
insane.
Story. I know it's huh? And I don't know whether that was the motivation,
right.
But why else get rid of the old guy? There's some he has some nickname. And all the times I've been my wife and I've been in Cracker Barrel, guess what? Blacks and
oh,
whites,
yeah.
We it, all
it's very diverse.
It.
I mean,
it's diverse.
Huh?
I don't get it. People want quality food,
yeah,
and they don't like to. I don't like to think that this store that I'm going, this restaurant I'm going to, is so kind of preaching at me about my beliefs,
yeah,
by telling me they're illegitimate. Whether or not that catches on in terms of the people who go, I guess it depends on whether the food remains good. But we'll have to wait and see.
Next story, Fred.
All right. Well, things are getting better in Washington, D.C., crime-wise. The U.S. attorney for D.C., you probably know her, Jeanine Pirro, reporting this morning that the district has gone 12 days without a murder. And apparently,
that's extraordinary.
Given the murder rate in D.C. and the violence that we've seen, there's nothing short of just a miracle that's going on there. And, of course, we know, I think it's at least six states now have their National Guard soldiers there. She was reporting there have been over 1,000 arrests just in the last couple of weeks since those soldiers have gone in there.
Do you know how, we could probably find out from people who've been there, been in the area, but do you know how the National Guardsmen are being stationed or positioned? Are they block to block? Are they, you know, in Washington D.C.? How do you know that?
I don't know how they're being assigned. I have seen images, and they're like everywhere. I think particularly they're certainly in areas where you may have some tourists, but also you know, the subway system, the metro, all that sort of thing. But also, I mean, they're out there 24/7. And so they're in areas that maybe they're known where there have been gangs and crime in the past, where people have congregated, starting trouble, all of that sort of thing. So that's where they are. But it is, you know, it is a miracle. There have been no murders in that city now for at least 12 days.
By the way, I did a quick Google search, and this says their duties, talking about the more than 2,200 guardsmen from D.C. and six states. Their duties include presence, patrols, monument security, traffic control, checkpoint operations, and supporting the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department and federal law enforcement partners. They are stationed across all eight wards, including at metro stations, Union Station, the National Mall, and in neighborhoods like the Wharf and Logan Circle.
You haven't had a murder in 12 days?
12 days.
And the murder right there would normally probably have a few.
One of the worst in the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, the reason I ask about how they're positioned or stationed is if you've got them block to block maybe and they're visible, I'm talking about the National Guardsmen, even though they're not really trained police officers.
Right.
But just the presence of the National Guardsmen themselves would prevent gang activity or crime activity on that particular street.
It says that they are authorized, talking about National Guardsmen, authorized to carry service-issued firearms, including M17 pistols and M4 rifles for personal protection. So M4, that's what they use for in the military.
But
this probably is not going to surprise you, but President Trump thinks this would work in other cities. And he's named a few, Chicago, Baltimore, and New York. Well, the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, not taking a liking to that at all. Cut number six.
Well, again, you know, the city of Chicago does not need a military-occupied state. That's not who we are. Here's the bottom line. They don't have police power. There's nothing they can do. You know, these are federal troops. They do not go through the training that our police officers go through, so they cannot even enact police authority. We're not going to surrender our humanity to this tyrant. I can tell you this, the city of Chicago has a long history of standing up against tyranny, resisting those who wish to undermine the interests of working people. We're not going to back down. We're not going to cower. We're not going to bend. We're not going to break. We are Chicago. We are the soul of America, and we will maintain that posture from now until.
Well, Janine Pirro responded to what the mayor of Chicago had to say. Cut 15.
You know what my response to that is? You know what tyranny is? Tyranny is when you can't walk outside and go to dinner.
Yep.
Tyranny is when they shoot you and the person walks out of jail before you get out of the hospital. Tyranny is when people are not made accountable. And they should hope that the president comes in with this unified force. And his joking, only 9 arrests? I'll tell you what the good news is that this mayor can't figure out. The good news is that they're afraid to commit crimes. When you have an increased law enforcement, people in the community, especially the crime-ridden community, they're saying, thank you. They're afraid to commit crimes because they know they'll be accountable. Johnson ought to hope that the president comes there to clean up the mess in Chicago.
That won't happen.
She's a firebrand. Now, the Chicago mayor, Brandon Johnson, is an incredibly leftist loon. But my personal opinion is I don't think it's constitutional for the president to send troops into cities where they're not requested. D.C. is a different story because it's a federal district, but President Trump does not have the authority to send in troops to clean up a mess that is made by duly elected leftists like Brandon Johnson. That is up to the people who live in Chicago to vote in somebody who will do what needs to be done when it comes to crime.
All right, we're going to take a short time out right here. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim, Ed, and Fred. Parrish Offord will be joining us after the break. You're listening to AFR. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.